Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast here on Game Wisdom. I am Josh Spicer, and we got a great cast for you tonight. This is our end of summer podcast. We're finally entering the fall. More games are coming out. Hopefully, the damn heat wave will finally stop. And I have two guests with us tonight. First, returning from Quarter3.com, Jason McMaster.
Hello.
And our new guest this week from Unwinnable, please welcome Chuck.
Hi, I'm Chuck Moran. Hi.
Hi, Chuck. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Josh. Should be fun.
Yep. So Chuck was introduced to me by Jason, and I know, Jason, you've done a few casts with the guys at Unwinnable as well, right?
Oh, yes. A wily bunch.
All right, so to get things rolling, for my audience who may not know what Unwinnable is, could you tell us a little bit about the site, Chuck?
Unwinnable is the brainchild of Stu Horvath, and we're 5 years old now. And he was working for the Daily News at the time, and I had a small blog, personal blog, where I was doing some video game reviews, and he was doing some regular reviews for the Daily News. And then one thing sort of spawned into another, and he kind of wanted to have a little bit more creative control over what he was doing. So then he started doing Unwinnable, where he was putting up his own reviews, other people's reviews, stories, and, you know, that kind of critical analysis of games. And now it's 5 years later, and, you know, we have the Unwinnable Weekly. We've got a couple of podcasts, and we've created a weird little cult. So it's fun. And that's what Unwinnable is in the smallest of nutshells.
Cool. I think you'll fit in pretty fine over here. Have you had a chance to look at Game Wisdom at all yet, Chuck?
Only after I heard where you were from. So no, I haven't, and that's on me.
Well, definitely be sure to check out the site. I do weekly podcasts. We have daily videos I put up. I do streaming most nights on Twitch, where I play games and talk about their design.
And
I've been getting into a game that I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. So for tonight's cast, we've got a big topic, which we're going to be talking about game difficulty. But first, since it has been a while since I caught with Jason and Chuck is brand new to the cast, I figure we'll get things rolling with just a quick discussion of some of the games we've been playing and the things we've been doing. So, I guess for this cast, I'll go first. The big game that I've been playing lately has been Duskers. This is the latest game from Misfits Act. They are the ones who did a game called A Virus Named Tom, which was this very lighthearted puzzle game.
Yeah, and I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it had average reviews. I remember it doing, like, too well. But they've got enough funding to work on this game called Duskers, and it just entered early access as of the 20th of August, and I've been really enjoying this game. It's a atmospheric roguelike where you're stuck in the future, and the only thing that you have to help you are a bunch of drones that you have to send onto derelict ships and stations and whatnot as you try to scavenge enough resources to keep your own ship going. And the whole thing has, like, that dirty tech aesthetic from, like, the original Alien and a lot of, like, 70s, 80s science fiction movies.
Awesome.
Where it looks like, you know, you're using, like, a 5-monitor, basic readouts, the whole deal. And it's a very challenging game because you're constantly having to decide how to make use of your resources, how long do you spend in a derelict. There's a bunch of random events that can pop up at any time. Like, you'll be controlling a drone, all of a sudden its video go out, and then that drone is completely blind for several minutes. But if that guy was trying to, like, fight an enemy or search around or get out of a place before the whole thing gets too dangerous, you're kind of stuck. Everything is procedurally generated, and right now they have several storylines in the game which sort of have, like, quasi-objectives, like find a space station and interface with a computer, and then that will give you, like, a new story and a new plot, and et cetera, et cetera. But the whole point of the game right now is just pure exploration. You have, like, the entire universe to explore, and it's about how long can you survive given your limited resources. And compared to, like, The Darkest Dungeon, I think I'm actually liking this game more than The Darkest Dungeon, at least for right now. It's only been out, by the time this podcast actually goes up, it's probably been out for about a week, version like 0.21, 0.22. But it's really impressive what they've put into it so far. Have either of you guys had a chance to like hear of Duskers before, or is this like the first time?
This is a first for me.
This is the first time I'm hearing of it, but while you were talking, I did look it up, and it does have some cool-looking visuals.
Yep, the whole thing has like that 1980s computer tech vibe to it. And you have to type into a command prompt in order to, make any kind of actions in the game. So you open up a door, you have to type in the door code. Or you have to tell your module or your drone to self-destruct. There's an actual command for that if it gets stuck by an enemy. And it's definitely a challenging game. One of the things you have to worry about, there's airlocks in all the ships, and you can vent the airlock, and it sucks everything out. And you can use this to instantly kill any enemy, but it lets radiation in, and there's a chance if you let the radiation in that it will start spreading to every room in the ship, and the radiation will kill your drones if you leave them in the fields too long. So I had like a case where I accidentally opened up the door and I forgot to close all the doors, and the radiation just like spread through the entire ship. I had to like do a suicide run with my drones to get them back to safety while being bombarded with radiation. I lost like two drones in the process. But it's definitely an interesting game. At this point, it is somewhat basic. As I said, it's only at like version 0.21 at this time. So I don't know what they're going to do in terms of adding to the mechanics and building it up. But it has a very great foundation. And as I said, it is available in early access, so you can buy it on Steam now. I think it's $20. And they're planning on doing 3 to 6 months of early access before officially releasing it. So hopefully it will be out just in time for the end of the year. And I'm really curious to see how this is going to stack up with the Darkest Dungeon. Have you guys, I think, Jason, I know you've played the Darkest Dungeon. Have you played it, Chuck?
Yeah, I've played Darkest Dungeon. And it's fun. It's got an old mechanic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's neat. This Duskers game, I wanted to ask you, how long does it take for you to feel satisfied, or you just play until you die?
It's definitely a, there's no, like, quote-unquote end to the game, at least right now. The story plots are basically, like, optional objectives. It's really more about how long you can survive. Now, from what they're saying, the longer you play, the more dangerous things are going to become. Like, there's different, the universe is broken down into sectors, and then those sectors have systems for you to explore. So there's a lot of ground to cover. Now, the only thing is that it is a little repetitive in the sense that the basic mechanic is going to be the same way. One ship's going to be the same way as another ship, etc., etc. But there's enough, I think, variability in how you have these different strategies based on the modules that you equip onto your drones. For example, if you find the Gatling gun module, this is the only offensive weapon in the game, so this will actually give you a way to directly attack enemies. Otherwise, you'll have to make use of locking and opening up doors to try to bait enemies around the space station to keep them away from your drones. Because other than the Gatling gun, you have no direct means. You can place down like traps and mines, but you have to trigger them yourself. And
gotcha.
The other thing I think is a little tricky is, in order to stand any chance of the game, you need to have some way to check rooms safely. So right now, there's really two modules you can use. There's a stealth one, and then there's a motion sensor. If you lose either module, because they tend to break down the more you keep them on mission, there's a chance they will start to show signs of disrepair, and then they'll just flat out break. If you lose all your means to track enemies, you pretty much have to restart, because the enemies in this game can kill you very easily. There's this, like, a leaping enemy, looks like an alien something. If it gets close to you, it's just a one-hit kill. It just, like, it jumps on the drone and, like, destroys it. And it's definitely roguelike in that regard. You can have a perfect run, and then one bad encounter, and you're just screwed. Like, I had a game completely ruined because I left the docking bay open and an alien got into my ship where all my other drones were, and he just had like a buffet in there. He killed everyone in the ship. And then I had no choice to restart. But when...
Well, you learned a valuable lesson.
Oh, yeah. Now every time I leave, I send one drone out, I immediately close that dock just to make sure no one gets in there.
Did you play FTL?
Yes, I did.
It's a fun game with doors like that.
FTL is definitely an interesting title like that. I still have not been able to beat the game on normal yet. I can only play that game on easy.
I have not beat the game. Yeah. You know, I haven't gotten away far enough. But like that's one of those things. Like I'll pick up, I'll play a bit, and then I'll put it down. And I don't stick with it for like hours on end. Mm-hmm. Where a game like that, a long time ago, I might have. You know, I used to play the heck out of like Rogues and stuff like that.
Yeah,
the time sink for a game like that is going to be less just because it just is.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is anymore, but
yeah, I tend to switch off different games too. Like I can't sit and play one game for like 5-6 hours anymore. I have to switch between different games or get up and do something else. And it's kind of interesting how our moods like that have changed. Because, again, I remember I just sat and played one game for like 8 hours straight. And I just like beat in one sitting. And I don't think I could ever do that anymore. Just because I can't just like play one game for a long time. I'll just get really bored and burn out on it. But fortunately, with all these indie games coming out, I can easily switch between different games. So I'm not getting burnt out too much as I was a few years ago.
I don't always finish games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't.
Yeah.
Just happens.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I do some, you know, I don't have a great record of finishing. Yeah.
I don't remember the last, like, massive game I've actually finished. Like, I can beat, like, a 2-hour, 3-hour game, something like that. But I don't even remember, like, the last, like, RPG. I'm talking, like, a 60, 70-hour game that I actually managed to sit down and beat. Well, actually, I lied. I can't remember. The last one was Xenoblade Chronicles. That was like the last big game that I actually sat down and I beat completely that game. But that's been it. Like even games like Dark Souls and stuff like that, I'll play it. But if I started like feel myself getting bored, I'll switch off and then I may not come back to it.
No, those I've played a lot.
You beat Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2?
Yeah.
I think.
And you. Yep. No, and you feel, you know, you feel as though the hours are worth it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, yeah.
I finished both of those games, but it took me a really long time because I kept getting frustrated. So I had to, you know, cool off, take a day or two, come back, get stuck, take another day or two, etc. But I know, like, people who just, like, sat and just beat that game, you know, 1, 2, 3, just, like, got right through it.
Oh, yeah, Bloodborne was probably, I played through that too. So that was probably the last. Well, I finished a couple since then, but
I have never started and beaten a game in one night.
I've done it one time.
Once for me too. I think it was like one of the Ratchet and Clank games. I think I just sat and just beat in like one sitting. That was like that 8 hour.
Loom. The LucasArts game.
Oh, wow, that's
a
good one.
One setting, yeah. Cool. It was a pretty short game. I mean, in my defense, it was like a 6 to 8 hour game. So, I just kind of shot through it real fast. But yeah, that's really the only one. I mean, other than, you know, little like experimental games I've judged for the FPS and all that, you know, whatever.
But I can't do it. Stu will do that. Stu Horvath will do that. But he also, you know, if you're going to start a game at like noon, you know what I mean? Then I can see being able to rip through it. A lot of times I'm starting my game at the end of the day, and I'm not going to be like, all right, I'm going to sit here for like the next 5 hours. And
I start like
play this
on the weekends. It's weird. I get up really early sometimes, and I'll play for like 2, 3, 4 hours, and then I'll go back and like lay down and take a nap, get up, and then go about my day.
I miss those days a lot. I have a child now, and that's not the Saturday morning gaming. Like I would get up at like, I'm going to get up at like 7:30, and I'd make a big thing of coffee, and like my wife would sleep, and I would so good, right? It's the best.
Yeah, that's
like no one is up, or you make some food, and like whatever chore you did is the best.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
because then like when the other person is there, they're like, oh my god, you made breakfast. You're like, I did, and I have been playing video games now for like 3 hours.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic.
You
know,
and then it's a good and then you start your day. But that's gone. Mm-hmm. Like I do not have anymore. Oh. Now if I want that, I have to be going to work, and it has to be something I'm playing on the train.
No, yeah. Mm-hmm. You have a Vita?
I do have a Vita, but I don't play it enough. Give me a Vita game that I'm like, dude, you have to be playing this. What do you
God, I'm afraid to suggest things because the things I suggest are probably more of a Stu Horvath line of things.
I don't mind that. I don't mind that.
Persona 4.
Dude, I am not playing that game. Like, that's not a Stu. If Stu played that, I'd be like, what's wrong with you, dude?
Well, he might not have played it, but it's...
I'm not playing that game. What? Like, that's... No. Like, sell me that game. Like, I've heard people talk about that game for a long time. It just doesn't seem like a game I would like.
It's strange.
Yes.
It's like a high school game, and your friends all have powers, mm-hmm. and...
Well, the town that you live in a lot of times is, or the school or whatever, has some sort of, like, evil thing going on, and you obviously, it would be a real boring game if you played one of the characters who went to sleep, but, so you have, like, all these awesome powers, and you meet a group of people that also can control these different personas, and that's what your powers are, is you control these, like, demons. And you summon them in different ways, but you end up going through all these different dungeons and stuff inside the town in the weird hours of the mm-hmm. night. I don't even remember what they call it. Like
Midnight Channel, I think that's what the name was for Persona 4.
Yeah. Four, yeah, it was the Midnight mm-hmm. Channel, right? It was like right at midnight or whatever. Time would stop for everybody except for a few characters for an hour, and then you have that time inside this kind of horrific maze in which people are being killed.
And you have to get through the whole maze, and then that's the game? Or is it like one of these things where you just keep like dungeon, you just go dungeon after dungeon after dungeon until...
Oh, it's a longer game, but like, yeah, you're trying to get through the whole behind the Midnight Channel idea and find out who's the person that's like taking people in there and killing them and then dumping them out someplace. It's a serial killer.
Let me ask you a question, okay? This is Persona 4. Yeah. Does it have anything to do with the first three?
No.
Loosely. I mean, not enough that you have to have played.
Right, but I mean, not enough. Not like it's similar to like. You know, like a Silent Hill sort of. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's certain things that are the same, but it's not the same story at all.
Yeah, right. Completely different characters in each game. There's a few characters like, you know, like the Easter eggs for like the fans, but it's not
of course,
like,
right.
like if you don't play right. Persona 1, it's not going to ruin your experience of Persona 4 type thing. It's part of the Shin Megami Tensei brand, which has been this very the hardcore brand from Atlus.
Yeah, that's it's a bit out of my league. Mm. You know, I used to work at Funko Land a long time ago, and when those games would come in, there was a certain type of person that would get those games. You know, and God bless, man. You know, I'm not gonna hate on any of that stuff. So, I don't think it's for me. I don't think that kind of game.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's like a lot of these games I've discovered because of reviewing. Because I probably wouldn't have tried a lot of games that I ended up liking. I'm not saying you would like Persona, but it just kind of sounds like, you know, wow.
It's one of those games where hearing someone talk about it's probably like not the best way to sell it. That's probably the best way. It's like, wait, so these kids are fighting monsters in a dungeon at midnight. Yeah.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing. It's very Japanese role playing game.
And probably the weirder one been the game Catherine. It also came from Atlus. Have you heard of that one?
Oh, Catherine. I played, and I liked Catherine because I don't mind weird games. Mm-hmm. I don't think I like that kind of game. Mm-hmm. But Catherine was a lot of fun just because it was so weird.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's the same group, I think, basically. Well, it's Atlus, but
they have, like, different development groups, right, sort of like right, Nintendo's houses. Thing, I think, too.
Right, well, they're a publishing house, so it's like, you know, because they published Demon Souls. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, who is it? Namco has it now, which is like, man, how'd that happen?
I'm still really confused about that myself. I remember Atlus and then Namco got, I'm like, wait, what happened there?
Yeah, that's a little strange. But whatever. Yeah. You know, it seems to be working out for them, and Namco needs something. Yeah.
Besides the Dynasty Warriors games.
Good
God. Those are so good, right? Right?
Yeah.
Very accurate representation of, what is it, China history, I think?
Oh, yeah, it's incredibly accurate. Yeah, it's like being there.
Oh, especially the costume. Mm-hmm. There's a word, and this is the second time I've brought this up, but I always forget what the word is. There's a word for those type of games.
Mm.
And it's like whatever the power move is like what they call those type of games.
Mushin, Mookie?
Yes, Mushin, that's it. It's like Mushin, yeah. I think. And like, because there was like a Gundam one. Mm-hmm. There was the Zelda one. And when I worked at Funko Land, those would come out, and there was like just another certain type of person would get those games. And they loved them. And they had there was like a controller that was like a sword for one of them and stuff like that. And it was crazy. Mm-hmm. But there's so many of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they're exactly the same.
They really are. It's really bizarre. I can't talk about controllers, though. I have every controller ever. I have one of those. I have a Dragon Quest slime controller, all that stuff.
Oh, nice. The blue thing?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Somewhere, I think I have a power glove. I remember buying it. I think I played once. I questioned my sanity after that. And it's in a closet somewhere. It may be in, like, my basement, you know, all the way at the bottom of my house, you know, box in the far back.
You're the unless yeah. Fred Savage got
yeah.
It's like somebody's got to say something about Fred Savage. Like
obviously, right. Something about Super Mario 3.
Let's just talk about the Wonder Years or something, right? Yeah. So, do you have the Resident Evil chainsaw?
I don't.
Oh my God.
Heard of it. I've seen it.
A friend of mine has it. Like,
I've seen them at stores. And then you saw them like on used shelves, and it's like, oh, this is like $45. You're like, I could afford that. I really can't justify that though.
Yeah, man.
There was like a Wu-Tang controller as well, which has like the Wu-Tang logo and stuff.
That's what I'd like. That's what I want.
Some weird things. You need that and like the Steel Battalion.
Oh,
I had Steel Battalion, but I ended up selling it. I actually really regret that because I really loved that game. Tom and I used to play.
Really?
Oh, yes.
That game looked awesome, but there's no way I could sell myself on spending $200 for a controller. There's just, I couldn't do it.
Well, you should have seen the look on my wife's face. And then you should have seen the look on her face when I had the damn thing set up in the living room.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's like we were just married, you know, and like we had this like postage stamp size apartment. And like, dude, when I was done playing, I'd have to like lean it in the corner kind of thing, you know, like. But, oh, my God, that was so awesome. And it was, like, hilarious because the first time I played, I didn't hit all the switches, and my dude suffocated because you had to turn on the oxygen to your dude in the cockpit.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know, right? And I was like, oh, this is awesome.
And she's probably like, you're an idiot.
Yeah, that was pretty much how it went, yeah.
It's like when you get seen like that, like my wife one time, like I had a screen up and like the whole thing, I'm doing everything. And it's like getting caught looking at pornography.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? You're just like, hey, don't look at me. All right. Like, I'm sorry. Like, this is what's happening right now. You know,
then after a few years, you just don't care anymore.
Right. And then you're just like, I'm going to talk like I'm playing video games right now. And I need you to cover the point. Okay. I need you to cover the point. That smells good. I need you to cover the point. Just keep covering the point. Can I get another soda? You know, and like, it just turns into this fucking ridiculousness.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it's been a good time. I do miss that controller, but I have enough ridiculous crap at this point.
Yeah.
My most recent ridiculous crap, might I add, is that there was a point where I went through and I was making a lot of money at one point in my life a long time ago, and I pre-ordered all these special editions, and some of them got bumped back. And then I ended up getting a Titanfall special edition that I forgot I'd ordered. So I have that giant, stupid robot.
Nice.
It's stupid. I wish I could take that one back.
Dude, Titanfall is the best tech demo I have ever played.
It is pretty awesome for that, yeah.
Like, it is like, check out what we can do. There is no game in there, though. Like, it's not really that cool.
No, it's... It's not statue cool. Yeah.
No, it's totally not statue. There's nothing statue worthy about that game at all. Like that game and Destiny should just merge. You know what I mean? And I would be very, I'd be like, oh, cool. You get these big things in Destiny now rather than like a speeder bike.
Yeah.
And I'm like, didn't Halo have trucks and cool things? No, Destiny will have none of that. Mm-hmm. You will get a speeder bike.
Yeah,
man, it would have been awesome if they could have merged those, though, right?
Oh, it'd been great. That's all that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Merge those two games, you'd have the best friggin' game.
Yeah.
I think I'm with you there.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm yelling.
The most I've actually ever set up in my house was when I got Rock Band. I've only hooked up everything up once. So I actually had like family over enough to have like a little party with it. And it just took over my downstairs. I was like, yeah, this is great, but what the hell am I going to do with this stuff after everyone leaves? It's just going to be me sitting downstairs with all the instruments hooked up.
I don't see a problem with that.
You put so much effort into getting it together, yeah. You know?
Like trying to get mousetraps set up back in the day, trying to get that whole abomination hooked up.
Oh, God, that thing?
Yeah. I never got to play it because like, I never knew somebody that... But like I would see people like, we should just put it together. And I'm like, there's a game to this? Like, how do you even play? I've never seen the whole thing together and
I don't
work.
Even know you win that game.
You don't win. No, nobody wins. Mm-hmm.
Nobody wins. The parents win. Yeah.
All right.
Rock Band. I hope they come out with like a Rush Rock Band. Sorry, you were saying.
No, I was just saying. What were we talking about again with this? I think we were talking about space at one point. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Space.
But it's always good to have at least one tangent, Chuck. Since this is your first time on, generally we have to have at least one or two just completely tangent conversations in these casts, and most of them revolve around Dark Souls or Demon Souls, so we hit our quota right there.
I'll try and remember that.
But just to, I guess, long way around, get back to Duskers. Yeah, so definitely check it out. If you subscribe to my Twitch channel, that's under GW Bicer, I have a lot of plays up. I'm going to be probably streaming it most nights for at least another week or so. All those videos get put onto the Game Wisdom YouTube channel if you want to watch it there. But yeah, definitely check it out. And it probably will be a good lead into our discussion on game difficulty later on the cast. So that was my game after that very long way around conversation. So let's move on to the rest of the group, and we'll go to Chuck this time. So Chuck, what games have you been playing lately?
I recently started playing Hearthstone on my iPad in the morning, and I'm not someone that plays card games. I've never really played a card game before, and I know that that one is. Like, I just looked it up. I looked up best card games. And, like, I had Narushima Rex is, like, one of them, or Narushima Hex or something like that. And, like, I had downloaded that under somebody's guide. But, like, I had never really played a card game. So it was difficult for me to, like, get the hang of it. You know what I mean? But I belong to a board game night, and I've definitely experienced a lot more games now. You know, I'm much faster at like picking up games and like understanding mechanics, since like we play so many games at like our so many different games at our board game night. So I was like, I kind of want to try this. So I did, and it's kind of fun. Like I enjoy it. I enjoy the mechanics. I enjoy, you know, how the game works. I never played Magic, and recently we had Gus Mastrapa on our podcast, and I was telling him about how I was playing Hearthstone, and he said Magic Duelists, or I think it's what it is. It's their, you know, it's their free Magic, you know, dueling game on iPad. And I started playing that, and he's like, you can learn how to actually play a game that's played rather than a game like Hearthstone, which is just really played, you know,
on the computer.
The computer. It's not something you could play, you know, with friends or something like that. But it's definitely a fun game. Like, it definitely is good at getting, like, the mechanics of it. That kind of wants me to, like, explore some other things that, like, I'm not, you know, I don't really play a lot of Blizzard games. I didn't play World of Warcraft. I used to really enjoy StarCraft. Mm-hmm. But, like, I didn't get into StarCraft 2, you know, so, and they don't really make a whole lot of games.
Yeah.
You know, despite the amount of fandom, like, unless you're into, like, this game and this game, there's not literally a lot for people like me.
Yeah, definitely. With Hold on 1 second. Let me fix that. Okay, yeah, definitely with Blizzard. I mean, I play Diablo 3, and I think that's pretty much it. I played a little bit of Hearthstone, but I just had a lot of trouble really getting into that game. We did a podcast, I think, last year, where I had a friend on who was a huge Hearthstone fan, and he was trying to convince me, you know, how great it is, and I've played it on and off, but it just didn't really have enough there to really hook me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it to each his own, you know. I can believe that, too, especially if you're into a game like Magic, because I started trying the Magic game, and I was like, oh, all right, I see the similarities, mm-hmm. but I also see how this is a little bit deeper.
No, it's deeper, yeah. I mean, it's not that much, though.
No, but it's just enough that it makes it, like, if you're, like, used to a certain level of you know, if you have a certain expectation to a game, it's definitely like the Training Wheels version of, like, if you've never played any of those games, like, I would highly recommend, you know, playing that. Like, that happens a lot when I try and, like, play a game with, like, people that haven't played it before. I'm like, oh, we should play this game. You can get it on iPad, you know what I mm-hmm. mean? So you can, like, kind of learn the mechanics of the game. So when you do, you know, that's a perfect example. Like, that game is great for that sort of thing. But that's why I want to kind of expand it into something like the, you know, the Magic games and stuff like that, so I can, like, learn how to play a game that other people play.
Yeah, I think the one good thing about Hearthstone is really just how accessible it's been to getting a lot of people into the collectible card game genre, because it has been a very tough genre in the past. With, like, the classic Magic the Gathering, even stuff like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh! And all that stuff, there's a very big barrier of entry, a really big cost barrier of entry to really play those games. And I think the smart thing Blizzard did was really make the free-to-play enough that you can jump in and just, you know, play the basic game of it really well. But then there's, of course, all the decks you can buy. I know they've released 2 expansions. There's a third one, I think, due out, I think, next month. Is that what they've been saying? The Grand Tournament?
Grand Tournament. Yeah, something like that.
And those cost money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can pay for it using their in-game, the gold currency, if you get enough gold from.
Gotcha.
Or I think you spend like $20, but they break it down, at least the previous ones, they broke it down to, like, the different. They do, like, a quest system. So, like, 1 week they'll release 4 battles, which are themed, and you get cards from that, and then they'll release next week 4 more quests, and et cetera, et cetera. And the whole thing will either cost $20 or it's like $5 a set of quests. And
see, that I'm sorry, that's one thing about, like, are you getting different, like, weapons and stuff like that, so that makes it easier for you to play the game against people that don't play these expansion packs, right?
The first one, what was it, Noxramas? Was that the first one, Jason? Do you remember?
Yeah, I think
The Noxramas one introduced a lot of cards that have become pretty much like staples of decks.
You can get those with gold too, though. You can unlock those things with in-game currency.
Yeah, but it's...
Do they balance out, or are they just like, oh, that's a really powerful card?
Most of the time, it's not that big of a deal, to be completely honest, from those packs. Like, and also, you have to understand, you know, you can craft any card. Yeah.
Ah, okay, so there's crafting.
Yeah, if you break down extras of cards you have, you get this magic dust or whatever the hell it's called. Angel dust. And you use that angel dust to make... it's not called that. But you use that dust to create a card. It's just certain cards, you know. Epic cards cost a lot of it, you know, et cetera.
Right, okay, okay. At least there's some sort of way to do it without having to spend the money. Because... balance is key.
And even if you do spend the money, at least that was another smart thing they did with that crafting system. So even if you spend like $20 on booster packs and you get absolutely nothing out of them, you can still break them down and then maybe get a card that you do want. So it's never like a lot of free play games where you just throw money down the drain. You know, spend $30 for 10 minutes of enhanced crafting, or, you know, we spend the money now, and then you'll spend $30, you know, 20 minutes later when your boost runs out. At least with Hearthstone, all your money, it's basically going towards something. You're never going to lose money like you would, especially if you buy, like, traditional CCG games. You know, you buy 20 booster decks or a pack and you get nothing out of them, you're stuck with those cards. It's not like you can take them back to the shop and say, hey.
This is true. Yeah, I mean, that does make sense. That is an advantage for the electronic deck as opposed to the physical one, because you're never gonna have the ability to do something with them as quickly as you can.
With Magic, I don't think I've ever really played Magic. I think, like most people in the 90s, when it first came out, I think everyone bought like the starter deck, whatever the hell it was. And then I did literally nothing with it. There was like no one around to play with. So I'm like, okay, well, that's my Magic thing.
Totally.
It came out when I was probably about 16. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge comic store in my hometown, and there was a big Magic scene there. And I ended up moving like to another state, and their Magic scene wasn't as big. Mm-hmm. So I went and found the places, and I'd go and get like cards that were worth pretty good amount of money for like next to nothing, because the guys just didn't care. They didn't know what they had, you know, like.
My friend Ken has sold Magic cards for hundreds of dollars. I can't believe how much money he has sold Magic cards.
I have
cards.
A friend named Ken who sells the Steam Train cards. He's like the freaking Wolf of Wall Street with damn Steam cards. I'm like, I get nothing out of them. He's like, I think he's made like a few hundred dollars off of like Steam cards and those Steam items. I'm like, I think the most I've had is like $20 out of all the cards I've sold.
I have a few that are worth stuff, but I don't care.
Yeah, me neither.
And I turned off trading and all that friend request shit because that's all I got. I got for a really long time was just people constantly friending me for my Team Fortress items.
Yeah, I've been thinking about
that. Oh, come on. That's the best, though. Wait a minute. You don't have fun with those people?
Oh, good dude. I got tired of it. Like, it was just constant because I have a few things that are like really old pre-order bonuses.
Yeah, I constantly, because I have a very unique hat that's like haunted, and like I get requests all the time.
Yeah, I turned it off because it was constant with me.
Oh, I make screenshots of our conversations. They're awesome. Like, I had one where I had some like Polish nationalist who had like a Nazi sort of allusion to in his name. And I was like, he's like, oh, I want this hat. And then I was like, oh, all right. I'm like, I don't want to do that. And my username is Japan Dude Girl. And he's like, so are you a Japanese girl? And I was like, no, I'm like, it's just a name. And I'm not interested in trading. And then he's like, oh, well, you should change your name. And I was like, are you a Nazi? Cause like he had all, it was like, you know, 88, right. You know? And it was like some kind of like crazy thing. And then he's like, no. And I was like, well then, you know, look at you're presenting, you know, and I'm still not trading you my haunted.
I'm pretty sure I got invited to like a Nazi Steam group at one point. I got like a weird thing. You've been
there. You know, it's so weird. But it's you know what it is though? The Nazi Steam groups, like, let's be very serious. The Nazi Steam groups and like those Nazi people that are like, oh my god, they're Nazis. They're not fucking Nazis. Sorry, they're not Nazis. They're just like
assholes.
They're just like jerks in Jeeps that have like redneck like taped to the back of their truck. That's exactly what they are.
That's about,
because they don't have like redneck people there in Europe, and that's what they call them. They call them Nazis because they're like, oh, this is the old way. Those are people are dumb.
This
jerks.
This is the old way from the old country.
Exactly. They're jerks, and I don't mean redneck in like a bad way. Like I don't think everybody from the South is like that, and I don't think everybody from but exactly. You know what I mean. Like, there's like people I've seen with their, you know, with their, you're from South Jersey, you know. Those people are around. Those people are jerks.
Well, we went to
give them a Steam account.
We have gone to some interesting places on this cast so far.
I apologize, Josh. There was some technical difficulties, and I got another beer.
Well,
I can't be responsible. It's Friday night.
That's right.
I'll keep quiet. But yeah, so I'm playing Hearthstone and Rocket League, and that's super fun.
And now back to Hearthstone after talking about Nazi Steam groups.
Yeah, right. Yeah, obviously.
That's how we roll on this cast.
Oh yes.
How are you finding Rocket League, by the way, Chuck? I've heard people like it. I've heard a lot of people talking about it, but I was watching footage of it. It looks interesting, but I'm not a big like sports or competitive player these days.
Well, the controls are a lot deeper than than you realize. You know, there's definitely like, oh, you can move, you know, you can move to the right, you can move to the left, you know, and obviously, but there's definite, it's a soccer game that you play with cars, if that makes any sense. And then your car can do, you know, flips, it can do turns, and it's a lot of fun. I don't play those kinds of games, but I really would enjoy games like Nintendo Hockey. You know, like I would enjoy those kinds of games. Like I like the NHL series in the 90s. That was for Genesis. Like that was a lot of fun. But that was like the limit. Like I never played Madden.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never played anything like that because there was – that's a deep control structure.
Yeah.
You know, like I got to be really honest. Like people, they're like, I'm really good at Madden. I'm like, I can't front on that. Like that's amazing. Like I am not really good at Madden and I'm really good at other things, you know? But it's a lot of fun. You know, if there was ever like a fun sport game that should be played now, it would be that. You know what I mean? Like that's the one that people should enjoy. And also it's cross platform, so you can play on PC with people on PS4, which is nuts. So I'm all about that. But yeah, it's kind of fun. It's worth it. It's worth it for the Steam wish list, like when it's on sale, like you should get it and be like, "Wow, this is tight. These are tight controls. This is a fun sports game." You know, I bought it at $20. I should have bought it when it was 15. You know, I'm always going for like the deal.
Yeah. It looks interesting. Again, I've seen a lot of like indie multiplayer games. I think the big issue is that a lot of these indie multiplayer games really don't seem to last a long time. I remember
this is made on the Unreal Engine.
There was a game called, I can't remember the name of it. There was this third-person shooter. It's basically like a Team Fortress clone, like super beefy guys. It lets you, like, customize your weapons. I can't even remember the name of it at this moment. And whatever it was, it lasted. It was got this huge push for, like, 1-2 months, and then it just disappeared completely.
A Brink?
No, but that's a good
that
one,
is
though.
Accurate,
yes,
though. Yeah.
That was a very good description of Brink. but no, I guess not. Okay.
Yeah, it's probably somewhere on my Steam list. It will probably take me 10 minutes to scroll down the list so to find it. But hopefully, it will do well, Rocket League, and they'll be able to expand it. Have you ever played a Monday Night Combat? That was another indie game that sort of rose and then disappeared.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was too, for me though, that was too much like Team Fortress. But then they did exclusive content for Team Fortress from Monday Night Comp. You know, they had like some kind of hat or something like that. And I was like, wow, you guys are embracing it. And I was like, I was more against it because it was too much like Team Fortress because I really like Team Fortress.
I wanted to like Monday Night Combat. I just didn't. I don't know. It didn't play well, in my opinion. It just it's something about the controls and just the overall feel of it. You know, if I'm going to play a game like that, I'm going to play something like, you know, Orcs Must Die, which is a much better game. Similar concept.
And they're making a free to play, or they've already made a free to play Orcs Must Die, right?
Oh, are they? Huh. That's awesome. I don't know. I haven't looked at it.
Yeah.
Only thing that came through my world today was Final Fantasy VII on iOS.
Oh yeah, and they're
it just out.
They're remaking.
Did you start?
It
did you buy it?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Did you get it?
Yeah, yeah. I haven't played it yet.
Is it the old one or is it a cleaner
one? It's just kind of an emulation, I think, of the old one.
I think I read that it's the PC port.
Mm. Oh, okay. Oh, that works.
That's weird. Yeah.
I know they're actually remaking it. I think there's going to be like a big re-release soon.
Yes, there is. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I saw a very embarrassing video of people that were excited about it.
Hey, man, that video was private.
All right. Let's move on. Finally, Jason, what games have you been playing?
The Blizzard suite. I've been playing StarCraft II, Diablo III, and Heroes of the Storm.
What did you think of Heroes of the Storm? I played it while I was in beta, and I think I'm just not a MOBA fan. It just didn't hook me.
I really like it. I've played a few hundred games at this point, I think. And I dig it. Yeah, I really dig it. But, you know, it's different. Than, you know, League of Legends is different than Dota.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a it's Blizzard's take, and it shows. You know, the different maps I think are really cool. Some of them need to be tuned up a bit because there's something to be said for a random element, and then there's the other hand of just like every time you play this map, it's random. Mm-hmm. Like you could just totally be kicking the hell out of them, and then they get like one lucky turn. It's like, oh, game over. You know, it's like that kind of thing. But for the most part, it's definitely interesting. I like what they've done.
I know when we're talking about games Chuck's been playing, I know you mentioned that you didn't play too much of StarCraft II or Diablo. I'm just not a big StarCraft fan. I mean, I like the story, but I just cannot play micro-intensive strategy games anymore. I just can't get into them.
It's funny. I'm like the opposite. When I was younger, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I couldn't concentrate on it. But as I've gotten older, mm-hmm. I've gotten better at them. Like StarCraft and stuff like that. I mean, like just the actual. I mean, maybe not the clicking part of it, but the build order, the hotkeys, the different things you have to concentrate on to play the game successfully. I mean, I'm sure a part of it is I've been playing like League of Legends and stuff like that for years now as well. And those are very micro intensive in a lot of ways. So it does certainly trains you up. Now, I mean, I'm not going to say micro-intensive in the way that's like the StarCraft 2 guys are, because that's ludicrous.
Yeah, I will never get like 100 APM anything in these games.
Oh my god. You know, like the League of Legends, you know, when you're playing that, and like, you know, you click a ton in that game if you're a pro, because you're constantly repositioning. But you're only positioning yourself. I mean, you're keeping an eye on a map, and you're dealing with attacks and all that, killing creeps. But you're not like dealing with like seven or eight different groups of troops, and like the those guys that can like click five soldiers and two medics, like individually moving them at a fast speed. You know what I mean? And like completely like stutter stepping with like 10 units at the same time. It's like that stuff just like blows my mind. There's no way I could do that, but. The overall strategy of it, I really enjoy.
Yeah, I will never be a professional StarCraft player.
Oh, God.
With Diablo 3, I know I've been getting really excited about the next content patch. They've been doing some really interesting things with adding more stuff to Diablo 3 lately. Did you play the latest season of it?
Actually, yeah. I've been playing one. I've got a character right now I've been playing around with. I was going to try to hit 70 before season end, which is like... Sunday, I think.
Really? And you think they're going to release the patch after the season ends? Like, is that what they're playing? Have you...
I think so. And I'll tell you why, because there's also a related Heroes of the Storm tie-in. Like, the last big content patches for Heroes of the Storm have been all Diablo-themed. They've released Leoric, the Butcher, and... Karazim, who's the monk so far, and they might have one more Diablo themed character, and they released a Diablo themed Heaven and Hell map. But it's a they're doing these cross things, like if you log into Heroes of the Storm you own Diablo 3 like this week, you get or like this month or something, you get like Diablo for free in Heroes of the Storm. So you might want to do that, even if you don't play, just for chuckles. Yeah. You might play in the future.
Yeah, Blizzard loves that the cross game stuff, and I think that's a brilliant marketing strategy for them.
And if you play Heroes of the Storm, if you get your Heroes of the Storm account up to like level 12, you get like a portrait and a banner in Diablo 3 and stuff like that. It's just constant crossover.
I would be lying if I didn't say that I downloaded Heroes of the Storm while talking about. Heroes of the Storm.
So. Well, see, there you go. It is, and it's a good game. It's specifically a good game too. If you're not familiar, you know, like a League of Legends guy or a Dota guy, it's a lot easier to learn on.
So, do they just not have an FPS game?
It is coming, actually.
Yeah, they've got one coming.
Bring that up next. They're planning on releasing Overwatch. Yeah. It's supposed to be their take.
Oh, that's right. They're doing Overwatch. Yeah.
Team Fortress 2 alike.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see how that's going to play out, because other than Diablo, Blizzard's not really known for like high action, you know, first-person type combat. So I'm interested to see how they're going to take it. But they've done well with Heroes of the Storm. They've done well with Hearthstone. So
yeah, a lot better on both of those than I actually expected initially.
And so, I mean, Blizzard's definitely a company that can, when they release a game, they can usually get good marks. I mean, they canceled that MMO they were working on for, what, like 10 years?
Yeah, that's where Overwatch came from. Yeah, that literally is. That's their assets from that game.
Yeah. And Jason, have you been playing, did you say you were playing World of Warcraft at all?
No. I'm a little burned at this point. Yeah.
I haven't played that game in years.
Yeah, 10 years is enough. I've given them enough.
Yeah, I just...
Now, if you logged in, you would be able to continue your character, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I played the last expansion as well. I didn't do all the raids, but I played up to top level.
There's this part of me that would, like, one day to just, like, get, like, the latest pack and jump back into it. But as we were talking about earlier in the cast with committing a lot of time to one game, I just can't see myself getting into an MMO that you could spend, you know, hundreds of hours playing. I just can't really see myself doing that anymore, especially with how I've become more about playing, like, games in quick bursts. But I have friends, I have people who've played, like, literally, like, World of Warcraft for, like, the last 10... Yeah, they just had their, like, what was it, like, 10-year anniversary last year? Like, there are people who've been playing it, like, day in, day out for the last 10 years. And even the games that I love, I could never sit and play them for, like, a huge length of time because I would just completely burn out on them.
You know, it's weird. Some games, yes. Some games, no, for me, like that. I can't do, like, WoW like that like I used to. Yeah. When it was new, I could play that game for hours on end. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, it wasn't every square millimeter of it wasn't mapped, and not every damn mod in the world had come out that you just click a button and it takes you to your quest and it does it for you, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, back then it was, you know, it was exploring. Yeah. You know, you didn't know what was going on. It was this huge world. It was huge at the time, too, you know, and just open. It was so awesome. But yeah, I don't know. I think the mods were great and all that stuff, but it kind of ruined the wonder for me.
I'm definitely interested in seeing more of Diablo 3. I think the part that I'm just really curious about, this will probably be the last thing before we move on to our next topic, with Diablo 3, I'm just really interested to see what their, I guess, no pun intended, what their end game is going to be for that. Because it's been stuck at level 70 since the expansion. They've been adding more, like, loot types, they've been adding more things to do at the end game, but they're really... I'm just not seeing a reason to keep playing as I did in Diablo 2. I know people who play, you know, all the torment levels. They, you know, do all the rare rifts and all that crap. I think the most I did was, like, Torment 2. I was like, yay, I have to do 4 more levels of this? I've already been in the game. What more do you want from me?
Oh, it wants more.
Yeah, so much more.
You know, well, I don't know. I played a lot of it, and Diablo 2, and I mean Diablo before it, and this one are very similar to me in that way. If it's anything like Diablo 2, then I will be playing that game off and on for the next 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, every season I will lock on. I've paced myself to play one class for each season. So last class was... Oh, I can't believe I forgot what class I played. That's good. It's been such a long time. I think it was... Oh, yeah, I did the Monk last time. I did the Crusader the time before that. So that's pretty much my way of keeping the game fresh. But I couldn't just... Again, I can't just sit there and play Diablo 3, you know, get 10 characters up to level 70. I don't have that in me to do that in one time.
I've got two. Mm-hmm.
It's endurance.
Yeah. And
the game's been out a while now, though.
It's true.
I mean, even the game, my go-to game, Payday 2, I haven't played that in like 2 or 3 months. They released a bunch of DLC to it.
We need to do that sometime
soon. Yeah, I'm still on. Send me a message. Yeah, they're at least some good news. They are doing another round of big updates starting in September. They're going to add in a lot of the stuff they promised with
Yeah.
And they're going to do another big, their big annual event, Crime Fest. So they're going to have a bunch more unlockables, a bunch more stuff like that.
Cool.
But yeah, definitely send me a message on Steam because I do really want to play. I know they're having a promotion on all the DLC right now at the time of this recording.
I think I have almost all of it for. I'm ridiculous for that game. I have like a zillion pieces of DLC.
They've definitely gone the Paradox route of releasing like DLC every month. Some of it's good. Some of it is just like more stuff. Really, it's why I basically wait for these sales. I get 50-75% off.
I must admit, I do have almost. At one point, I had...
Yeah, at one point, we all had all of it, and then they just released another. You can buy all of...
Crusader Kings 2.
Oh, yeah.
I have almost every DLC for it.
Dear God. That's up there.
That's
like...
a huge sale. It was like 90% off, and I spent like $70. Like, the ridiculous amount of crap for it.
I think it's a Rowan Kaiser game.
That's an awesome game.
And all those train simulator, farming simulator, they have like, what, like $800 worth of DLC to them?
Don't get me started on train simulators and drinking and like sitting in front of your computer. I was like, this is a great idea. This is not a good idea.
Oh, we had like a 30-minute conversation one time with Euro Truck Simulator and what you could do with the riff and just drinking while playing that game. It was hilarious.
I couldn't even... No, I mean, just drinking and buying stuff on Steam is a bad idea. More than drinking and playing that game. That game I tried to get, I couldn't even get the damn thing started. It was so complex.
Oh, yeah. I've got games on Steam I don't even remember buying. It's bad when you buy a game and then you go on Steam like, wait, I already bought this? When the hell did I buy this game?
Oh, yeah, dude, I've done that. Man. Like, did you... There was a thread on a forum recently where it was like the top 1%. Did you see that? It's like you're in the top 1% of people in Steam if you own over like 100 Steam games. And I was like, oh, please.
Yeah, I've definitely...
Just 100.
Are you kidding me? One of my friends actually beats me. I was surprised. I have 839 last I checked.
Well, I'm sure you have more than me, but I have a ludicrous amount.
He has like 1,100. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, I've only got 403.
And I thought I had more than that. That's the scary part. With all the Steam sale, Humble Bundle, and now getting like press copies of games with the site, I thought I would have been over 1,000 by now, but apparently not.
Now, I will say a lot of my... I don't have very many like cheap games on here. I have a bunch of like expensive crap on here. However, we have plenty of cheap stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. One of these days, I have to buy more like those solitaire games. I bought that. I cannot play those visual novel games like Hotful Boyfriend. I just can't get into them. I'm pretty sure I have a few like those kind of games on my list.
I know you do.
Of course.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, with the clicker games, I've been getting comments from my friends every time I turn around going, why are you playing this game? Go play something else. That's a problem when you have too many friends on Steam because they can see everything you play.
It's safe with me. I just shook my head and I was like, oh,
just
God.
Like hang your head in shame. How dare you? Like, I remember when I played a Duke Nukem Forever. I got for like $1. The second I load that game up, I had like 10 people go, Josh, what the hell is wrong with you? Why are you playing that?
Yeah, I reviewed that one. That was a hoot, Nanny.
Dude, I wanted that game to be so good.
Mm-hmm. It was not.
No. Yeah, there are some games that I know that I cannot buy or play on Steam, even if to try a review from the site, because I will get angry messages from my friends about, why did you buy this game? The new trick, though, is I pretend to be offline now, so I play the game offline, so no one will know that I've been playing it. But then, of course, they can see the achievement pop-ups because all these clicker games have, like, 800 achievements.
Oh, yes. Keep on clicking, buddy.
Yep.
What are these clicker games?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like, Cookie Clicker, the ones that's just about clicking and you watch numbers go up. It's time waster in the purest sense.
Yeah. And then you have things doing auto clicks for you and certain amounts of clicks and all this. It's just, it becomes this kind of weird clicking state machine that you have to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little weird.
All right. So with that, let's move on to our big topic then tonight. And that is talking about game difficulty. This is a topic that I've wanted to talk about for some time, especially with the growing popularity of roguelikes and a lot more challenging games. One of the things that I hear a lot is that it's very hard to critique a difficult game, because you always have fans saying, oh, you're just not good at games, so the problem's on you. And it's definitely interesting when you're trying to critique a game that is meant to be difficult to decide what makes a game that's good difficult and what makes it bad. For instance, I did not like the game La Mulana that came out a few years ago. I thought that it was difficult for the wrong reason, and when I commented that, I of course had people saying, you know, you just suck at the game, that's why.
What game?
La Mulana, Muliana, something like that. It's like this 2D Metroid-type game.
Oh, screw that.
And you hear the same thing with games like The Darkest Dungeon, FTL, Demon's Souls, etc. It's very hard to be able to critique these games without people commenting that it's supposed to be difficult, so you can't use that as a talking point for it. So it's one.
I think.
Yep.
I do think that there's different levels of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you look at the Souls games, and the Souls games, they are difficult. There's no doubt. But realistically, what's going on in them is that they have a very rigid rule set.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of that rule set, if you follow all the rules and you do everything how you know everything is supposed to work, you're going to kill everything in the game. It takes some practice and some familiarity with the way that they design their weapons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get that down and you figure out, you know, your move set and how the character moves, those games aren't as difficult as they are unforgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing, because like with a roguelike, roguelikes are just going to be difficult because there's nobody behind a roguelike going, well, you know, they're going to need a health drop here. They're going to need this or that. You know, there's no intelligent design behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, you know, the ones I'm, you know, what I'm talking about. Like the most of them, like the standard roguelike with procedural generated mm-hmm. dungeons, etc. It's just there. And you can open the first door and get murdered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just kind of a whole different level. You know, I think there's certainly a subtle difference.
Okay. So I guess the first question then for both of you is, what are some examples of games that you felt the difficulty was, I guess, too much or wasn't like the right kind of challenge? Like those games that just becomes more unfair or cheap in terms of design.
Jeez. I think any game with a standard one-hit kill was always a little too irritating to me. Like, what was it? Was it the Bushido Blade?
Mm. Yeah, I know that had one hit kill.
Oh, the fighting game?
Yeah. The one hit. Yeah. I just didn't want to invest the time, you know, into playing it, and it just seemed too much of a pain in the ass for me. But then again, you're also talking about those games. Like, there's like a subtle difference between. Not a subtle difference. There's a big difference between playing against the computer and playing against people. Because I was thinking about that in preparation for tonight. You know, I've been playing a lot of StarCraft too,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I can play against people, and there's a fair chance that maybe I can, you know, if they're not just like much better than me, I can sneak a win on them. When you play against a computer, they are programmed in a way to perform the actions of a really good player in precise timing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like it's more difficult to play like a expert computer opponent than a good StarCraft player. But then above that, of course, the pro players are going to be better than that, et cetera, et cetera. And that may be clearly just like a StarCraft thing, because StarCraft is all about timing mm-hmm. when it comes to difficulty and the difficulty of performing like a task in that game. Like if you were to play against a hard or above computer opponent, they can just produce stuff faster than I can, because I cannot personally focus on that many things at the same time.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was playing like Rise of Nations, and you're trying to play like on like the highest AI difficulty settings, just how
just rolled.
Yeah,
I feel as though when you play games on like the higher settings, like that's more for you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like if you're doing that, that's for you. You know, that's not for everybody.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Like there's no betterment in playing that way unless you're like, oh, I'm good. I should probably play it on the highest setting because I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know,
or you want to challenge yourself, or you
right? Unless you like, yeah, that's yeah. totally on you, though.
But, like, right, right. And then again, that's right. That's really not what we're talking about, I guess. Overall, right. We're talking about games that are designed
right
to difficulty. Mm-hmm. As for games that just, and a lot of people are going to think, they call me a quitter or something. Is Titan Souls? I've played around with it a little bit. I just can't get into it. I just don't.
But is sticking to it and quitting and saying, oh, well, like, you know, you're a quitter. But like, is that because you don't like it, because you don't like that kind of training that they're giving you with the game? Because I always feel as though that like when games are like, oh, this is very difficult. And it was really interesting what you were saying about Dark Souls, about how like if you follow the rules,
mm-hmm. yeah,
you'll do fine. You know what I mean? It's just not forgiving. It's like,
right.
It's just being like a dick. It's not like, this is like hard. It's not really that difficult. You just really have to follow exactly what's going on.
You there's no room for impatience.
Right. And like, then there are games that are just hard.
Right.
Which are just challenging. And you're just like, I don't blame anybody that just is like, I'm just really not interested in playing this anymore. And usually that's what happens when the game is too hard. I'm just like, I'm just not interested. Like, I don't have this kind of time commitment interest in like playing it from like the beginning. Mm-hmm. That's why sometimes I'm more attracted to games like Hearthstone, because like I can at least get the taste of that without having to put in such a commitment, you know, having to learn such a hard rule set.
And I mean, let's be realistic too. I mean, that's why games like the Black Ops, Call of Duty, all that stuff is wildly popular because
right.
you can just jump into those games. There's not a huge time commitment involved. So, you know, and everybody, if you've played one of the Call of Duties, you know, the left trigger aims, right trigger shoots, you know.
Yeah, you played them all. You know what I mean? There's no nothing. It's like lowest common denominator stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And there's a lot of appeal to that, you know. And then there's the games in between. Sure. Assassin's Creed, etc., from varying difficulties. But then, of course, there is the top tier. And most people do think of the Souls games. They think of FTL. They think of roguelikes.
I think FTL is way more fun than Dark Souls.
I see, it's such a different thing. Like, if I get it, like with Demon's Souls, for instance, I love the atmosphere mm-hmm. and the artwork in Demon's Souls so much, and the sound design, that like if I get into that game, you know, I can play it for a good while. But then you look at something like FTL, it's like I can just play a quick game of FTL and feel satisfied. Mm-hmm. So there's like certainly a lot more commitment involved in one than the other. But
right.
I think that to me, FTL is a harder game, but it's also not a game that requires you to put a lot of time in it to punish you.
I don't mind getting punished. Then it's over, you know, and then I just do it again.
Exactly. Right.
I like the fact that like, oh, cool, I unlocked a different ship or something. You know, like I like being rewarded a little bit. I feel like sometimes there are games that like, oh, it's over and you have nothing to show for it.
Well, it's like, you know, for me, with Demon's Souls, because like me and Gus Mastrapa were some of the first, I guess, few people in America that got copies of it, because I was doing video work for Crispy Gamer at the time, and Gus and I both got the standard Atlas, like someone wrote on a disc with a Sharpie and put it in
right
in like a donut box and mailed it to you, standard thing, and like we're like, well, let's try it out. So we both got like really into it, and we're talking back and forth about it a lot, and for me, playing that game is so fascinating because it's so lonely. And then I would start playing through it, and I would go, well, okay, I got this far, and I got killed by this guy, but I know he's there now. So I start over and I go, and of course, you know, it was enjoyable to me to learn the maps, mm-hmm. learn where things are coming from, and just kind of perfect the way that I kill everything to the point where you just like, you're running through it eventually, you know, just like you get so confident that you can just run through and stab everything down and everything. And you're, mm-hmm. you just get better at the game. And,
right.
That's really rewarding. But yeah, I mean that's the big one I can think of, you know, other than just roguelikes. So it's really hard to even.
I just to say about roguelikes, I think I was just thinking about it and I'm like, all right, like what's the hardest game that I play? And honestly, it's DayZ. It's the most unforgiving.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
It's the most unforgiving game you can possibly play. It's not really a difficult first person shooter sort of, but there's so much on the line. And then it's over, and you're like, wow, that sucks. Now I have to start all over again.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Dwarf Fortress. I mean, so to be fair, that is probably the most unforgiving game.
Yeah, and that one doesn't even look pretty. You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of ugly and weird.
Involved in there.
Right.
Yeah, and I love that game. That's one of those games I could totally get lost in. It's so weird.
It's almost like any roguelike like that. Yeah. Like anything where you're like, I put a lot into it, and then I lose it. It's like, that's the hard one.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it really is. You know,
that's the cruel mistress. You know,
I've started so many different dwarf fortresses that they've all just starved to death or been killed by demons or, you know, it's like that. It never ends well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
They always dig too deep.
I think for me, when a game is just like too hard, too frustrating, is when it feels like a lot of my control is taken away from me. Like, there's nothing I can do. I'm going to lose, and that's it. Like, the example that I like is Dungeon of the Endless, which was, like, it's sort of like a roguelike meets tower defense game. And in order to win, you basically need the stars to align to have any chance. Everything needs to go perfectly right in terms of progression. If you mess up in one area, the game is just going to punish you completely, and it's completely out of your control. And I just kept playing the game, and I just got frustrated because every time I lost, it's not because I made a mistake. It was simply because the game decided at this point to screw me over. And it just got to that point where it was like, I don't really want to play this game anymore. While there's been games like Spelunky and even like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls where even if I lose, I still feel like I've made some kind of headway. Some kind of progress has changed between when I first played it and when I died.
Yeah, sure. You feel you've learned something at least or gotten a little something out of it. Yeah, it's... Yeah, man. Some games are just... I'll tell you the games that are the worst to me is the games that controls completely ruin. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the control itself is the difficulty. Mm-hmm. That kind of bothers me. Like, a bad camera can make a game so much worse.
Like the old school survival horror games when they were doing all the isometric stuff.
Oh, yes. Resident Evil and Silent Hill's god-awful control schemes.
Oh, yeah. The camera is such a big thing, especially when you're trying to do horror as a small tangent. That's one of the things that just kills tension for me, because while I'm more pissed off about the camera and the controls, I'm not really feeling scared.
No, but I think that's meant. Yeah. I think that's intentional. Yeah. That's meant to give you anxiety. That's
definitely
meant to like force you.
Oh, it works.
To like play it, and it does. It like makes you like upset and the whole thing, and you're like, I have to do this right. You know what I mean? I can't look away. I have to follow their rules. Mm-hmm. You know, and like their rules are this way, and this is as janky as those controls can be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, earlier in the cast, we talked about The Darkest Dungeon. And I'm just, for both of you, what are your thoughts on that game? Because I've heard polarizing opinions, especially since the last update, which added in new mechanics like corpses that block party positions and a new way for stress to kill you.
You know, I haven't played in a while, but I thought it was all right. It was just, the problem I have with that game is it was really easy to get stuck in town with kind of like a crappy party, and then it's kind of difficult to work your way back out of that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of bothers me, but I mean, other than that, that's just kind of, you know, that's obviously just how the game goes. But yeah, I haven't played since that the new update, so it sounds kind of irritating.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Chuck?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I totally haven't. But I did play it the first round, and I got it from on a Stu recommendation. I got it from a friend, and you know, I enjoyed it, and then that was kind of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't played it much after my initial burst.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like that happens all the time with almost every game that comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no stick-to-itiveness to stuff. That's how you end up having like hundreds and hundreds of games mm-hmm. that you actually want to play. And you're like, all right, enough. Mm-hmm. One thing at a time. I mean, so many people putting out games. So many things are like the best. It's tough. It's really difficult.
Yeah. Now, we mentioned a few minutes ago regarding higher difficulty settings and how they're designed more for a niche audience compared to the normal or easy mode. And one games I like to bring up whenever we talk about that would be like XCOM Enemy Unknown and what they did with the four difficulty systems or four difficulty settings with that. Because I thought that was very interesting. On the easy and normal, the game feels completely different than how it plays on Classic and Impossible due to enemy stats and your own squishiness of your units. And it's interesting to me just about that game and trying to break it down, whether or not those mechanics were good or if the difficulty sort of got in the way of that. Because I'm of two minds of that. I have yet to actually beat the game on Impossible. I don't think I ever will. So that whole XCOM 2 thing, I'm right in there. I think I beat it on Classic like once, and I think that was about it.
You know, I remember Terror from the Deep, mm-hmm. and it was like being punched in the face. And that was kind of like what that reminds me of. So I would say they hit it. Mm-hmm. Like right on. I think they got that difficulty down. It was there is a certain something, I guess, to that. Mm-hmm. However, I'm cool with playing it on that one, particularly on normal. Just because I really enjoy those games, but like it's I don't know, man. I'm not a teenager that's got like a lot of time to just mm-hmm. like. I don't know, because those games are not games that you can just, like, either, you know, oh, my character came back, I can keep going. Those games are like, oh.
There's nothing wrong with playing it just to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Just play it once, play it through, and that's that.
But the problem with XCOM is, like, you can get so far into it, and then you realize you're screwed. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, I probably should have gone and helped those dudes in Japan that time instead of going to the UK, and now we're all screwed.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I like about the Souls series, is that you're never put into a position where you're screwed and you have to start from the beginning again. You can if you want to, and I have done that several times, but that's because I wanted to greater optimize my character. But as you were saying, Jason, with a game like XCOM, or even something like I mentioned with Dungeon of the Endless or the Darkest Dungeon, when you play those games, if you don't do well enough or you make the wrong choice, you can end up in a position where the game is either impossible or just very, very difficult to climb out of that hole.
Here's your cue, Chuck. It's unwinnable.
See? An unwinnable game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's neat how they take with XCOM 2, like you were saying, that you weren't able to beat it.
Mm-hmm.
It became unwinnable on the impossible. But like you're not supposed to, like people aren't supposed to truly enjoy that, I don't think.
It's just for the masochists.
It's just for people that are just really into like, I like challenging myself. It's like, all right, I guess so. You've obviously already put the effort in to get to that good of a skill set to play it at that level, so you might as well try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's the thing. It's like it's certainly for the more hardcore, but that goes back to the difficulty levels.
Yeah. And I think Firaxis did a good job of balancing that out. And that's actually another interesting point I want to ask both of you. What do you think of games that have one difficulty, it's, you know, that's the normal difficulty, versus games that spread things out. So you have, like, easy, normal, hard, masochist, you know, what they did with, like, Wolfenstein, that kind of thing.
To be honest, if it were if I had my druthers, it would be games where were designed to one difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like choosing.
Yeah.
Normally, I will go with the one directly above normal because I play a lot of games.
Yeah.
But I don't. It just kind of depends, you know. I wish that they would design to one idea and not be afraid of people deciding that that might be too much for them or too little for them.
You answer, Chuck, I just want to ask you, Jason, since we mentioned Diablo 3 a few minutes ago, and, you know, obviously that has multiple difficulty levels, what did you think of Diablo 3's progression from normal, expert, et cetera, et cetera?
It's kind of, well, that kind of depends. You know, if you're a good Diablo player and you know what you're doing, you can obviously play on a higher level, starting a character, but it does have kind of a progression as you go through the game. Mm-hmm. However, you know, it's strange what they did, and I'm fine with it, but, you know, the whole old thing was you had to beat Diablo on normal. Yeah. And then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now I think you have to beat it to get to, like, Torment or something like that, but whatever.
And then once you beat one to that character, then all your characters, I think, can start at Torment or whatever you want.
Right, right, which is, you know, when I level a character now, I do it in Adventure mode because I've played through the straight game so many freaking times at this point. The progression is okay. The thing is like, if you play those games, once you get to one level, if you play it long enough, you get loot from that level that basically makes you too powerful for the level you're on. So, you know, the progression just kind of goes naturally through that. But that only kind of starts happening above Master, really. Anything below it, I don't know. It's not even really worth playing on most of the time.
Okay. And, Chuck, what are your thoughts on the multiple difficulty levels versus one?
When I play a first-person shooter, if I really enjoy the series or I really enjoy the game, I'll play it on the highest level. But I generally just like to play things the way that they're supposed to be played. Like, you know, you made the game, you know, I'll play it the way you want it, the way you want it played. But I do find that a lot of times with, like, first-person shooters, especially since there's been so much homogenizing of them. The default level is like, okay, this is for, like, idiots. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I like a game that's like, you know, I like to play. Like, I want to feel tension when I'm playing, like, a cool first person shooter or something like that. I don't need to be like, I am the best.
Yeah.
Because then I'll play it, like, on the regular level. I'm like, all right, I am, like, God.
Rambo.
You know what I mean? I'm, like, blowing through a game super fast. But I recently played what the hell was the name of it? I will tell you in a second. Spec Ops: The Line, and I wanted to play it more for the story, so I played that on just regular, just because I just wanted to kind of blow through it. Like, if there's stuff that I want to purposely, like, get through quickly, that's like a shooter, which would be the only genre that I would really change, because I remember with Wolfenstein where they would do, like, I Am Death Incarnate.
Oh, yes.
Which I thought looked awesome, and I think that was, like, more the reason. I'm like, I'm the best, you know? Like, it's awesome! And I would choose that, you know, when I would play with my friend, then it would be really hard. But this was back in the day when you had, like, a game. Like, one game, you know? That's what you did. You played that game. And, like, that's why I think I was more tolerant of difficulty. Where I would be like, I'm going to play Command & Conquer because that's it. You know, that's all you have. You know, maybe you have the other thing in 2 years. You know what I mean? Something else. But
that's so true.
You would play it for so long.
Yeah.
But so first-person shooter is the only one I change. And, you know, that's it. Like, I would never play, like, the games that you're talking about. Like, so many of those games are so difficult. Like, I would never be like, I'm going to go play that again. That was a lot of fun. Like, no, that was not fun. That was much too difficult. That was much too painful. Of a process.
Yeah, for me, I think I'm the same way as you, Chuck, with the first-person shooters. I had them play them on one difficulty level higher. I think when I played the latest Wolfenstein game, I played that on the level below Death Incarnate. And it was pretty challenging, but there is a point, there is that line that if a game is just massively difficult, like if they're just bumping all the enemies up by like give them 100 more points of health, let them kill you in 5 hits, I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Like I don't think I would ever play Serious Sam on like the highest difficulty, because that would just be like, all right, this guy has no soul, you know what I mean? Like, we are just gonna destroy that person from the inside out.
RPGs are a big one for me. Like, I cannot, let me rephrase that. I do not enjoy RPGs when you're playing them on like the quote unquote highest difficulty level, because then it's just pure stat bombs. It's not like they're making the game harder, they're just making it a lot easier for enemies to kill you. So it's not right, like your strategy has changed. It's like, oh, instead of this enemy dying in 5 hits, now he dies in 15 hits. You know, have fun.
Right. There's nothing there's nothing fun about that.
Now, as a quick aside, Chuck, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you like to play the game the way the developer intended. And I guess this is a good question for both of you. What do you think of games that have mods that drastically change how the game plays? And the example that I'm thinking of that I'm actually looking at right now is the Long War mod for XCOM, which, for those of you who don't know, the Long War mod is a conversion mod for XCOM Enemy Unknown or Enemy Within that basically does a massive rebalancing of the entire game. It changes the class structure. It basically makes the game a lot longer and a lot more in-depth, but it completely it also makes the game it slows that pace down dramatically compared to what Firaxis intended with the original Enemy Unknown and Enemy Within.
Well, you know, I've had this discussion actually a good bit. Mm-hmm. And the way I've always come down on it is that when I play a game, mm-hmm. I play through it the first time as intended. Mm-hmm. After that, I go whatever goes, you know. I'll mod it and do crazy stuff or whatever. But I do want to have the first time I play a game to be just like straight up vanilla, no looking stuff up, just no mods, nothing. You know, I just want to play exactly as they intended. And then once that's over, yeah, all bets are off, and I'll do whatever. I enjoyed modding Fallout and Skyrim and all sorts of games over the years. So, like, yeah, I'm very pro mod.
Okay, and what about you, Chuck?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I like mods, but I think like what you were saying about total conversion mod that increases the difficulty, I think those are kind of funny, and I think that's another specific type of person. I know somebody that's like, oh yeah, I like the survival mods where you have to like drink like a glass of water like every 15 minutes or you're gonna die.
I have friends like that. Yeah,
and that's weird, you know, like that's really strange. And like the fact that you want that, and you want that, like, oh, I'd like this to take forever. You know, like, I'd like the build times to be extenuated, and I'd like it to be more whatever. I mean, some to each his own, you know, that's just really not for me. I was saying before, I used to play the hell out of Counter-Strike, but then that kind of like, okay, now I'm dead and I'm just sitting here, that got boring.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to do that anymore. Like, I don't crave that kind of experience. Like, I mean, I like certain aspects of that. I like it when they start introducing like weather and health and stuff and eating, but I don't need it to the way where it's like, this is just like life, and it's like, I've got one of those.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't like to play games that have like the mods that really dramatically alter the original experience or make it a lot harder just for hardness sake. I think one thing that's really helped me in terms of playing games hard level, I do tend to go for those achievements. Like, I will play a game like on the hardest set, or at least hardest that I feel comfortable playing. But if it becomes just too frustrating, I will dial it down, because there's sometimes where the pacing becomes affected. I know we were talking about this earlier, Jason, with having the multiple difficulty levels, and when you start having like, you know, like normal, hard, then super hard, extremely hard, that kind of thing, sometimes the pacing gets messed up when you're trying to play the game like those higher difficulty levels. I remember a good example when I was playing God of War, the first one, and I was trying to beat that game on I think Titan mode. I was like expert. That was when that was unlocked after you beat the game on normal. And I spent basically a day and a half on that final fight because it was just not balanced at all for what they did to the stat increases. I'm pretty sure I threw a controller at that point. At some point, I was so frustrated. And that was an example where it just felt that the developers' intent to make it harder overran the pacing or the balance they had originally with the game. Now, one thing we've talked about with this discussion on difficulty is when it just feels that you're just banging your head against a wall, and that's where it just feels like the difficulty just doesn't work for you. And since I know you guys didn't play the Darkest Dungeon, I just want to quickly talk about the changes they made and get your thoughts on this, because this is one of the more polarizing discussions I've seen going on with the game at the moment.
All right.
The two big changes that have caused a lot of controversy has been the addition of corpses. What happens now is when you kill an enemy, they leave a corpse behind in their slot. Traditionally, when you kill an enemy and that enemy dies, all the enemies get basically pushed up one slot. So the enemy who is in position 4 goes to position 3, etc., etc. With these corpses now, it means that back row enemies who can unleash their best attacks from there can basically spend longer back there dealing damage to you. The only ways to deal with corpses are to either kill the enemy with bleed or blight, critically kill them, or use a skill that specifically says corpse removal. And now there are some enemy fights where this can become very dangerous. Like if you have an enemy like who can spawn more guys, he basically can create an everlasting wall that your front row guys just can't hit. The second change is that now with the stress mechanic, where before it just hit 100 and then your guys would either freak out or become stronger for that dungeon, now it will go up to a 200, and if it hits 200, your guy will have a heart attack and die. And it's an instant kill. It doesn't matter what your character stats were, what their level is. They hit 200 stress, boom, they're dead. And people have been complaining that this is taking the game too far into the hardcore difficulty realm of things, where traditionally Darkest Dungeon was a hard game. But as we said earlier, it's a game where you can sort of get put into a frustrating position if you know you lose all your best classes and you don't have enough money to recoup. Now, people say that you can just spend time grinding, but that's never a good solution to say, oh, just spend 5 hours and then you can get back to playing normally.
Yeah, you might as well just restart at that point.
Yeah. So with those two changes, what do you think about them?
You know, it, I guess it just depends on the will of the masses at that point. You know, if people like it, then obviously that's good. If not, then not. You know, the corpse thing is kind of irritating because, yeah, that's a good way to kind of save your guys some damage. And I don't know. They don't sound that bad to me. The game is already hard. I don't know what they're expecting.
All right. And what about you, Chuck?
I don't know. I mean, that's it. It's their game. You know, if they really want to like add that sort of stuff, like, okay, like it's not the public's game.
Yeah. Know? I mean, at that point you just basically go like, you know,
whatever.
I'm not going to play your game anymore. I don't know.
Right. I didn't get the new content, so it wasn't, you know, I liked the game because I thought it was really cool looking, you know, and it had like a narrator, and everyone likes a good narrator, and everyone likes a Mike Mignola looking, you know, Hellboy looking game and stuff like that. Everybody likes that sort of thing. That's nice. But yeah, you know, past that, past, you know, oh, they're going to add all this stuff to it. Okay. All right, Nate. Okay, fine. It's still going to look. The gameplay is still going to look the same, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it just kind of adds another level of nuance to it. There's not like, I don't think it's like a, you know, a game ender for, but a lot of people, you know, people get fanatical and they just like shouting shit online.
Like you can buy a game like, you know, Carcassonne or King of Tokyo, and then there's expansion packs for it. You know, and then it adds, it's like, oh, well, this does this now.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, that's fine. If you don't get it, then you don't have that rule.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you don't like that rule, just don't play it.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're going to be coming to the end in a few minutes. I know we're getting pretty long in this cast.
So, hour 7.
Yeah. I have one. Here's, I think, my last question, at least one I have off the top of my head about difficulty that I definitely want to ask both of you about. As we've talked about with difficulty settings, it can change how you play the game or it can change the audience. So this question I want to ask both of you is about games where the higher difficulties essentially alter how the game is played. And I'll give you an example of that. In Payday 2, right now there are, I believe, 4 difficulty levels. You have normal, hard, expert, and then Death Wish. Although I could be... It's been such a long time since I played. It could be either 4 or 5. But basically, the highest difficulty in the game right now is Death Wish. And what happens is the jump from the previous difficulty to the Death Wish, there's a huge spike. Basically, enemy accuracy is improved dramatically. The amount of damage they do is improved. Maps are changed as well. They'll have harder variants. And you also run into the enemy called the Skulldozer, who's basically a long-range character who can... He uses, I think, a heavy machine gun that can basically wipe anyone out in a few hits. And
Skulldozer is a pretty awesome name.
Yeah. It really is. That's what I was thinking, too.
And what the point is, and what people complain about, is that in the other earlier difficulty levels, you can build a character, or build your skills and your perk deck and whatnot, pretty much any reasonable way you want, and you'll still be able to contribute to the team, you'll still be able to get through a mission. When you're playing on Death Wish, however, there are pretty much black and white straight builds that you need to play as in order to have a chance at contributing. There's the dodge build, which I like. There are builds that focus on armor. There's some about the correct way to play as the mastermind or the support class. And the point is that when you're playing on Death Wish, you really need to lock yourself down to these ways, or the quote-unquote correct build, or the correct way to play. And my question for both of you is, what do you think about games that go that route with difficulty, where when you try to play on the highest level, it's no longer about playing the game normally. You have to play it this exact way, or, you know, good luck, you're never going to be able to finish it.
I'll say this. It depends on what type of game it is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the biggest things that led to the downfall, in my opinion, of ESO, Elder Scrolls Online, is that once you hit the veteran levels, now they've changed this and everything, but I think it's just a bit too late. Once you hit the veteran levels, you couldn't play the game how you wanted anymore. Mm-hmm. There was only very specific builds that could live through any of the veteran level stuff, and it kind of irritated me. However, if you're looking at something like a MOBA or something, that's just how it is. The same thing with World of Warcraft.
Because you're playing it like the PvP or the high-level competitive aspect.
Right. There is 100% a most powerful path to follow in those. Okay. And because there's finite choices.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, there's reason behind that. But as far as stuff like Payday with like the... creation, or like the creation of like the crazy dude and just like kick the hell out of everybody and all that, it's cool, but it's also at the same time it's like one of those, it's almost like bravado to do that, but it's also, it's interesting. I mean, and it's also, you know, it's not for everybody, and it's not like a forced part of the gameplay. So I mean, really, I think it's great because it creates more content for people that want it, but it's not usually for me.
Okay.
That's for the person that wants it. You know, that's for the person that really, you know, is thirsting for that kind of experience. I think that can be said about any game when they throw in those like ringer characters. I don't think the game is about beating it. It's about how long you can beat, you know, how long you can last. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Some of those challenges are just there for people who maybe even only get one game. You know, they're like, oh, I play Payday, and that's really all I play. So I like this.
All right. Yeah. So I think with that, we're going to wrap things up. As Jason said, I think we're like at hour 10 or 12 of this cast right now. So I think it's about time to say goodnight. So I have a few quick questions then. First, obviously, I think we've said enough about difficulty. I mean, it's definitely a great topic. We could spend another hour or another podcast or two talking about it. So to wrap things up then, I just have a few quick questions, or hopefully they'll be quick. So the first one for both of you, as we've said, we've talked about a lot of great challenging games. So for both of you, and you can either one you can answer first, what is your like favorite hard game? That game, you know, like the brutally difficult one that you just like to play. Now, Jason, I think I know your answer. I think it's going to be Dwarf Fortress, right?
Yeah, yeah, obviously, yeah. Dwarf Fortress or Demon's Souls, one of the two.
All right. And what about you, Chuck?
I like Hotline Miami. I like those kind of games.
Oh, yeah.
Just over and over again. And I play that on my PlayStation Vita. So.
What an awesome soundtrack.
Oh, and
It is fun on the Vita, too. So there's that.
I liked Hotline Miami 1 more than I did 2. Have you played the second one yet?
I like the second one as well. I like it that it's weirder than the first one. Like, it's certainly like, oh, you've decided to create a universe in this game. Good times. You know, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah. I thought the second one got a little too far into what we were talking about, like that head-banging difficulty, because you can get 99% of a floor clear, and then that one enemy just wanders off camera, kills you, then up there goes the last 5 minutes of play.
That's almost like the build thing, because you have all the different masks, and you're just like, all right, there's a way to do this better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I use this character, I'll be able to do it better than if I used, you know, something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know what you mean.
All right. And I think for my final question, just to wrap up this cast, as I said, we're recording this. It's the end of the summer. It's time for the fall season. Black Friday, all that good stuff is only a few months away. So for the group, what game are you most excited about that's coming out hopefully by the end of the year?
Oh, Jesus. Fallout 4.
Okay.
I'd say Fallout 4 because I'm more excited about that than other games. So I'd say Fallout 4.
Oh yes.
Mine has got to be XCOM 2. I'm really looking forward to that game because it sounds like they've basically gone through everything to figure out what they did right, what they didn't do, and are just trying to basically make a definitive version of their game. So I'm really hoping this game turns out well. But then again, I've had horrible track records with being hype for games. I mean, I was hype about Black and White, and we all know how that turned out.
I was up there too. You know, it's all right.
Yeah. All right. So with that, we're going to end things here for the cast. Jason, as always, it's great to have you on. Hopefully we can have you back real soon.
Hey, yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah. And Chuck, it was great meeting you. It's great to meet another
guy
in the Jersey area, too.
Nice. Yes, definitely. keeping it real.
Yes. Yep. And hopefully we can have you back on and maybe some of the other guys from Unwinnable, too.
Cool. Yeah, good times.
Awesome. All right. So for those of you listening, we're going to end things here for this edition of the Perceptive Podcast. As always, if you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom, we have several options available. First, if you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, and we are looking for either enthusiasts, students, designers, just anyone interested, you can find all the information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. And to contribute to our Patreon campaign to secure some much-needed monthly funding to keep everything rolling along, you can find me on Patreon under Josh Spicer or Game Wisdom, as well as the banner on the front of the page, and any donations would be greatly appreciated. And finally, as we've talked about throughout the cast, I've been doing regular streaming on Twitch, where I'll play a variety of games, talk about their designs, and do general spotlight or playthroughs. You can find me on Twitch under GW Bicer most nights at 10 Eastern, and most of those videos will be put up on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel. So, with all that said, thanks again for tuning in. Hopefully, you are beating the heat and things will cool off now. Have a great rest of the summer, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care.